Okay, check this out. I ingested over 250 terabytes of data in this open source observability platform, and it compressed it to just 2.67 terabytes. That is over 40 times the compression size of what Elasticsearch offers you, and this is with no data loss. And as a result of this efficiency, you're getting around 140 times lower cost for your observability. I am talking about OpenObserve, and I could not be more excited to share this with you. Let's get started. So let's break down what OpenObserve actually brings to the table for observability. So at its core, it's an open source platform that is designed to consolidate logs, metrics, traces, and real user monitoring into one environment. Now, this is intended to solve the common issue where DevOps teams have to juggle between multiple disconnected tools to see what is actually happening across their tech stack. It deploys fairly simply. You can use to deploy as a single binary, for example, or you can use a Helm chart, and it avoids proprietary query languages and sticks to like SQL and PromQL, so you don't have to learn something new in order to use OpenObserve, which I appreciate. From an infrastructure point of view, one of the main technical choices they have made was using Apache Parquet for columnar storage. This basically allows them to have the system storing data on low-cost object storage rather than more expensive indexed alternatives. This is incredible because the system is reported to achieve up to 140 times lower storage costs compared to Elasticsearch. 140 times. And a total cost of ownership that is roughly 8 to 10 times less than traditional SaaS platforms like Datadog, which is quite popular. They have achieved this through they have a flat ingestion when we talk about the pricing model of a price per gigabyte, and they have removed per user licensing fees as well. So no sudden bills and no vendor lock-in, which is incredible, and it's open sourced. But the cost is not the thing I want to emphasize on, because beyond this cost structure, the platform itself emphasizes interoperability. Basically, cost is like an outcome of the efficiency that the platform provides. It supports OpenTelemetry natively, which helps the organizations to avoid being locked into a specific vendor's ecosystem. It also includes an AI-driven agent that is designed to assist with the root cause analysis, and it allows the users to search through their data using just natural language queries in multiple languages, by the way, English and others. You can use natural language using your language of choice rather than complex code. Currently, the software is used by several thousand organizations that are handling scales ranging from single cluster monitoring for startups to high volume environments processing over 2 petabytes of data every single day. So people are using this, organizations are using it, and I would say if you want to learn more about the theory, the why behind the project, go check out their website. I'll leave the links in the description below. What I am more excited to show you is a hands-on demo, so let's get started. Okay, so the first thing I want to do is show you the UI and how I can change the UI based on what I like. I'm going to have to select a stream first on the left-hand side. For example, I'll select the default one. I'll show you the other ones later on. Here, I'm getting a bunch of information. Right, I'm getting the source, I'm getting the timestamp, events, right? But I want it to be personalized, so I'm going to click on any one of the records, and I have these fields over here. I'm going to click on, let's say, I want to see the Kubernetes cluster. So Kubernetes cluster, add field to the table, and on the body as well, I'm going to say add field to the table. Now I close this and I go back. So this is my default view now, right? So the UI has changed, and anytime I come over here, this is going to be my preferred view. Now let me show you how filtration works. So I'm going to select another stream, or hotel demo, for example, and I'm going to click on any one of the records. And let's say I want to select Kubernetes namespace is default. So include this in the search term. So what you're going to see is going to happen is it says Kubernetes namespace is equal to default. So I can filter according to these fields. If I run the query, so these are all the fields where Kubernetes namespace is default. So this is how the filtration works. I can also do this in SQL. query language. So I can turn on the SQL mode. So here in the toggle, I'm just going to say SQL mode. And now here I have a query for SQL. Now what I'm going to do is, let's say I want to search all the logs with, you know, error in it. So I'm going to say match all error and run the query. This is empty because I selected 15 minutes. So past, let's say, 6 days. Here you can see all the errors are highlighted. Now, another thing I want to show you is if I search for a field name, let's say Kubernetes pod name, inside the OTEL demo stream, it's going to show me all the values. I can click on one of these and you can see that I'm it's getting populated. So if you've used like Elasticsearch, this stream that we are getting, OTEL demo, is like the index. And then these are the fields. And these are the values inside the field. The next thing I want to show you is the AI tool. So you can ask the AI to create a query for you. So I'm going to be like, search for all the errors in the last 4 days. And it's going to create this query for you. So if you are the kind of person who doesn't like writing SQL, you can ask the AI to do it. And it works quite well, as you can see in this demo. It here's the whole, if I scroll down, you can see the whole query that it generated, and you can edit it. You can hit run query and it's going to show you all the errors in the last 4 days. Pretty cool stuff. Okay, now I want to show you something cool. How do you parse incoming logs? Because, you know, logs are problematic and most of the time they are not in JSON structured format. Developers don't want to do it the right way. So I'm going to show you how you can use OpenObserve to parse your logs while they are coming. So here I go over to the streams, and here you can see that I have Kubernetes namespace is equal to Envoy Gateway, right? So I can add these sort of like conditions, like, hey, service name has to be Envoy. So if these two conditions are hitting, you move forward. So that's how I can parse my logs. And after that, the next step, I'm passing it. I'm using this function to parse. So Envoy Gateway parsing, and this is essentially going to parse it and return it. So that's pretty cool. And these functions I can create myself, and I can use these functions in all of these steps. So if you want to see how that looks like, I'm going to cancel this. I'm going to go into the functions. And here you can see, let's say, parse Nginx, just to show you. So edit this VRL function. And here you can see that if the namespace is equal to Nginx, ingress Nginx or whatever, and then do some parsing for this, right? Parse the JSON. And based on the input data on the right-hand side, you can actually validate it. You can run it, you can test it, you can do a bunch of stuff. And if I run this, let's say query, logs, stream name, let's say default or anything, for example, doesn't matter. Run the query and you're going to get some answer. It will return this data actually, as you can see. So now you have returned a VRL function and we hit a test function. There you go. That's the output. So if it parses, it will give you this particular output. So that's what I meant. These functions you can use in all of these pipelines, right? So if I edit this, as you can see, this is the second last one. And once you have done all of these, you can see at the last one, let's say the logs Envoy Gateway. So this is the final stream where you're going to get it, okay, where you're pushing it. So if I go to the final one, see it's logs stream type in the Envoy Gateway stream, I'm giving my filtered, logs. And if at the top one, where am I getting it from? I'm getting it from the default stream is where I'm getting the data from, right? And I parsed it and I pushed it to Envoy Gateway stream. And I can have multiple paths. I can send multiple kinds of data to multiple streams depending on where it is. So that's pretty cool. And not just that, I can send it to a remote stream as well. So on the left hand side, see, I'm going to pull off a remote stream. I'm going to click on create new destination. So I can send this data to any of these destination types. So OpenObserve, Splunk, Elasticsearch, Datadog, Dynatrace, New Relic, something custom as well. Now, the next thing I want to show you is where to get this data, the data sources. So quite easy to install. If you're using Kubernetes, just a simple curl command and pretty standard. There's GCP, AWS, Azure as well. You can go have custom sources here as well. OTEL Collector, quite popular, right? FluentBit and FluentD, Logstash, pretty easy stuff. So just copy this and run it. Okay, if I go to AWS, for example, you can launch a CloudFormation stack, and it's going to start ingesting all that data from AWS. You can select individual services as well if you want, or you can do like a quick setup, if you want. So a lot of options for you. I think pretty cool. And if you go to metrics, here you can see Prometheus, the AutoCorrector, and AWS CloudWatch metrics. You can go to traces as well. Here's the OpenTelemetry, AutoCollector, quite standard stuff, right? You go to web servers, you can see Nginx, and there's databases like Redis, MongoDB, Postgres, security, DevOps as Jenkins, and a bunch of stuff. And now let me show you how you work with AWS VPC Flow Logs. So if you work with AWS VPC Flow Logs, this is how you get the data, right? In just one single line, let's say, and filtering this is actually very, very painful. Try to understand that. So with OpenObserve, what you can do is, I'll leave the links of this blog in the description below, right? So it was just one single message that AWS VPC log, Flow log gave me. But this line that I'm just showing you right now, this line number one, this is all we needed to parse it. Okay, so this one line parsed it for the entire stuff, and this is how we get it now. So this is the response that we get, this one. Right, so this from one line, this is what the message that I get. I parse it using OpenObserve, and this is what I get. Right, so this is what we get. And I think that's pretty cool. It's much more readable. And this is line number one. The second line is deleting it, for example. But the third line is actually because we have the IP address, it's geo mapping it. Right, so we have, as you can see in the response body, it has information about the location as well. So this is pretty cool, and most of the observability tools out there that you will find, they don't have this functionality of log parsing. You have to do this in like a FluentBit, Vector, AutoCorrector, right? And that's not cool. But it's very important. Think about this. These log forwarders essentially are running on your Kubernetes cluster next to your application. So it's on the same host which your application is running on. Now, the challenge is that if you do this, like a lot of parsing and processing of the telemetry data, it's consuming a lot of the resources of that machine. Now, these resources on the machine were meant for your application. So the whatever you're using, AutoCollector, Datadog agent, this is now consuming hundreds of gigabytes of memory. But this is happening on the server side, right? What I just showed you using open metadata. So your client side is super fast, and it frees up the resources for your actual application. It's actually pretty fast. If you try it out, I would highly recommend. Check out this blog. I'll leave it in the description below. You can follow alongside with that as well. Okay, now let's go to metrics. So for logs, metrics, and traces, OpenObserve supports SQL as a query language. And for metrics, they also support PromQL. So you can do a bunch of stuff. Like if you want to build charts, let's say, for example, if you take a look here, SQL and the, let's say, the builder pattern. So if we want to put timestamp on the x-axis, here I have the timestamp on the left-hand side. There you go. Put that on the x-axis. And on the y-axis, I'm going to put the value on the y-axis. And I'm going to just click on, as you can see, the query has been updated. So I'm going to click on Run Query. If there is data, it will appear. So there we go. Right? Now you can convert this into a line chart, like a bar chart, area chart, whatever you want to do. Right? Pretty cool stuff. You can click on language, and here you can see English, but there are, like a bunch of languages, French, Spanish, Italian, Chinese, Japanese. All you have to do is just click on that, and the UI will essentially change. So there are a bunch of options for you to create these dashboards. You see like 20 dashboard types, but they also have 19 out of the box. The last one is the custom chart, which is basically like you can create your own custom chart using Apache eCharts. And these are like more than most of the systems that what other projects provide. So these are like quite powerful. I'll show you an example actually. So just take a look at this, for example. This is the Kubernetes node pods chart. As you can see, quite complex. I can make changes. This is a demo chart. As you can see, I can add maps and stuff, a histogram, a line chart, If I go to like custom one, as you can see, nice little animations. So the amount of options I have over here, it's quite cool, right? I want to show you something more cool. So obviously like your pie charts and stuff, your temperature, but what I want to show you is this, the 3D custom charts. Try doing this in other observability tools, right? Try doing this. And this is all being done by Apache eCharts. You can edit these as well. You can get the code over here. You can make some changes if you want. But I think that's pretty cool. The amount of customization that OpenObserver provides. And this is all being done by custom charts. So that's cool. Okay, now let's go to traces. Let me show you what that looks like. I'm gonna select the stream, let's say hotel demo. And here you can basically see these spans, right? And you can click on traces. It's gonna show you the grouped traces and along with all the spans that we have in each of these. Click on any one of these, let's say front end proxy. So it's giving you much more data, right? So this provides me a lot of information. I click any one of these spans, I can see the details. I can see the logs, the metrics. I'll see everything over here. I can filter it accordingly for pods. Now, if I show you the flame graph, it will show me like the timestamps as well. Click on any one of these and it will take me to the appropriate span. Right now, if I go to trace graph, I will see the entire flow of how this works. Right now, let me just go back to traces. Click on service graph over here. Now, this will basically show you the complete service graph of my system for this period. One other thing I wanted to show you is graph view. That's the one. So this will show you how these services are interacting with each other. I can click on any one of these. Let's say click on any one of these, click on this. Here you can see details around that, right? So that's pretty cool. Now, one other thing I want to show you in tracing is that, let's say if I select a stream called SRE agent intersection, for example. Now here I will see that these are the traces, the spans for the SRE agent that I am using to create the dashboard. Now, if I click on any one of these, you can see that for each of the calls, how much money was spent for, the AI tokens whenever an LLM call was made. So this is like the amount and this is the number of, tokens that were spent. Right, so it gives you that data for how much money you're spending with LLMs as well. So you're getting that cost data and your total cost for using these LLMs. So you can check various models you're using. You can build dashboards based on this as well. Then we have real user monitoring. This will basically show you some stats like LCP, INP, CLS. This basically just shows you how well your front end is performing. So it's giving you that overview as well, along with some errors and sessions. Speaking of sessions, let me show you actually what that looks like. So the cool thing here is that you can see your users here. I'm obviously hiding the emails. I click on any one of these and I can basically see all the errors this user faced and what they were actually doing. So if I click on this play button, I can do a replay of what they were doing on my website so I can help them, debug and answer questions, which is pretty cool. Now I want to show you the AI assistant again. I can ask it to create a Kubernetes dashboard. I can ask it to create alerts and stuff. And it's not just about writing queries, but it can create dashboards for me. It can do a bunch of stuff for me. So you can see it has created a really nice looking one for me. Very cool stuff. Okay, so moving on. One other thing I want to show you with logs is that one of the issues people have is that they have log sensitive information, right? So I can add patterns to recognize some sensitive information. So for example, like your credit card numbers, any API information, email IDs, and things like that, right? So what you can do is you can, I can here click on discover, let's say MasterCard number. So here you have basically like a pre-built regex pattern, a lot of these. You can add your own patterns if you want. And all you have to do is that whenever this particular log data comes, you can either redact, dropped, or you can hash it, as you can see on the screen. You can do this at the time of ingestion or at the time of query, right? Or at the time of query. So click on add pattern. So that is done. Applied patterns. And that looks good. And update changes. So there we go. That makes sense. So whenever the data is being ingested, if you filter it, it's going to be redact the sensitive data like the MasterCard number from your pipelines. But you know, the real life problem is that somebody has already ingested this data. And now people are like, you know, why did you do this? You have to now delete the data. Because that's an issue, because it's supposed to be immutable, the log data. So what you can do it, you can also hit this at the time of query, right? So at the time of query, what will happen is that when the data, it will see when someone queries the stream with this sensitive data, it's going to redact that data, right? So no one can actually see it. So I think that's pretty cool. And you can add any number of patterns to this one, right? So I can go back. I can go to the settings, right hand side on the top. Here we go. And here I go to the sensitive data reduction. And here you can see some patterns are there, like 17. I can create more, right? I can use the AI to create this as well, but I can click on import. And there's a list of around 147 pre-built patterns that you can import. So YouTube video, for example, insert. And that should show up as the 18th one. Here we go. Yeah, pretty easy. So that's also something I wanted to show you, right? So very important for, you know, compliance. It's very, very important, extremely important. And, you know, for traces as well, because they get this kind of stuff as well. So I showed you the dashboards, right? Now, one of the cool, interesting thing is that, let's say your boss is like, hey, I want this, dashboard to be emailed to me like every month on this time, right? Every morning at 7 a.m., your manager is like, I want you to send it to me. So you can actually do that via reports. And here you can actually edit the report, for example. So this folder, this dashboard tab, like the Reddit, for example. So, you know, I want to send it as a PDF. And at this time, so you can schedule it. So at that particular point in time, you will be able to send it to that email. So that's pretty cool. All right, we've seen a bunch of stuff. Let me show you what alerts look like. There are three types of alerts over here. There's the schedule, real-time, and anomalies. So real-time is simplest one. Like, for example, if you, in any log, let's say you're getting like a text coming in like error, for example, or panic, or anything else that you want, you simply just report that. The second one is schedule. So schedule is like, for example, if CPU utilization is greater than 80%, right? But you don't want to do that every time that it happens. You only want to do it like, let's say I want to be alerted when the average CPU utilization is greater than 80% in the last 5 minutes, right? And I want to run that every like 5 minutes or, you know, 3 minutes or whatever. That's what you want to do. So that's basically what happens. And you can send it to like any location, you know, that you want. So if I go to settings on the top, and here I go to notification destinations. These are a bunch, as you can see, but I'm going to click on new so you can see. So here you go. You can send it to Slack, PagerDuty, email, Microsoft Teams, Discord, or you can create custom destination as well. Okay, so here I can basically set alert rules. I'm going to select, let's say, metrics and CPU sort of like usage. And there's this concept called alert flapping. So let's say my CPU is like 80%, then I get an alert, goes to 79, then goes to 80 again. I don't want it to be, you know, giving me the alert again and again and spamming me. So I can add like a cool down period of 10 minutes. For example, I can add the destination, like I want to send it to Slack, and then I can just save it. So yeah, easy stuff. Okay, now let's create a new alert. I want to show you anomaly detection, right? And here I'm going to go on the right-hand side, alert type, on the extreme right, anomalies. So what I want to do is that for setting up this alert for anomaly detection, if you're not familiar with the concept of anomaly detection, Let's say you want to do like you want to alert based on the number of login failures, for example. Okay, but the number of login failures on every Monday on an average is going to be like, let's say 500 login failures, for example, on every Monday. But if you check, let's say over 1000, if it goes over 1000, I want to get alerted. But on Sunday, it's going to be like, for example, 10 or 20, because not a lot of people are logging in because it's a holiday. So if you keep a threshold for 1000 on Sunday as well, but you get like 50 alerts on Sunday, it means that there's something wrong, but you will not get an alert for that because you set the threshold to 1000, right? So 1000 on Monday, but 50 on Sunday, for example. So what anomaly detection does is that you train the data based on whatever data you already have, and it looks at your complete graph over the period, and then it's going to basically show you, it's going to create a machine learning model, and every time it will get fired, it will evaluate according to that particular machine learning model, and it will check whether I need to send this alert or not, right? So that is what it does. And the anomaly score that you see essentially over here, the slider right over here, what happens is that you can basically specify the threshold. So if it is above 95% or below 5%, for example, only then give me an alert. Okay, so you can set this sensitivity as well, right? If I select a stream, for example, CPU or whatever, load data, as you can see, if there is data in that, if the data is there, what's coming in, it will show you, right? So it's going to show you the upper trend line and the lower trend line. So right now showing you normal, but once the machine learning model gets built, it will be like a curved one, right? So that's also what I wanted to show you for, anomaly detection. And essentially, if you take a look, there's a training window of 14 days, as you can see here on the lower right. Training windows 14 days and retrain every 7 days, right? So this is for your model that it will be creating. Cool. So this is essentially how anomaly detection works. Okay, one last thing I want to show you is the incidents. So incidents, you can think of it like as like an SRE agent, right? What it also does is that it's gonna, when alerts are created, you can ask them to be moved to incidents. So if I click on this one, you can see 2,340 alerts are there. And one of the challenges is like alert fatigue, right? So what it will basically do is it's gonna group all of these alerts. This is standard incident management. So if I go to incident analysis, I wanna show you something. Here you can see the AI SRE agent is seeing what changed since the last analysis. So it's gonna tell you, in this report, what happened, what is the impact assessment, what actions you can take. Not only that, it gives you the executive summary and a bunch of stuff. But the problem is that with AI agents, the problem is hallucination. How do you know if it's like, legit or not? So they have the evidence section over here, as you can see. So what did we do? How did we come to this conclusion for this incident report? So it gives you all of that information. And then it gives you like the action items as well. Right here you can see, so immediate actions and for the future, what are the long-term stuff that you can do? And if there are multiple kinds of alert, it can create like an alert graph and show it to you. So I believe one thing is clear after this extensive demo is that people and organizations moving away from traditional platforms to OpenObserve, the main ROI is performance, right? You also don't have to learn something new. It works with like SQL language and PromQL, etc. But the interesting thing, and kudos to the team at OpenObserve, it's an open source project, you get all of these things, logs, metric traces, whatever, in a single binary. So a single Docker run, you get all of this in just like one single binary. So you will run this in like a couple of megabytes of RAM. Try doing that with some other product, right? So you want to run this sort of like infrastructure, you can think of it like a single node cluster is enough, and you can get started in a few minutes, just do Docker run and you're good. That is impressive. That is absolutely incredible in terms of like the efficiency and the performance gains that you're getting compared to the heavy hitters and the bigger providers in the industry. That's the power of open source. I would recommend check out the GitHub repository. Links can be found in the description. Just search for OpenObserve. Join their community. They are some of the really smart people in this ecosystem. So you can ask your questions directly to them. They just raised a massive fund as well, fundraising round, I believe. So congrats to the team. But I would recommend joining their community. Check out the GitHub. I think that's what I would recommend you to do. Run it on your own system. Easy, as I mentioned, 2 minutes to get started. And all these links that I'm blabbering about, you can find in the description or just search for OpenObserve. If you have any questions, let me know in the comment section below. I will see you in the next one. This was a lot of fun. Thanks for watching. Bye.